Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headline the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Amanpour. Here's what's coming up.
President Zelensky at the front lines amid plans to reboot Ukraine's military strategy. A report on the little-known successes. And I speak to Finland's presidential frontrunner Alexander Stubb, maintaining a delicate balance as NATO's newest member. Then, the latest from Gaza as Israeli forces push Palestinians ever closer to the Rafah border. And
this is not about a camping trip. This is actually about pushing humanity into the solar system.
NASA Deputy Administrator Pam Melroy on the growing frontiers in space. Also ahead,
Black people, we are often, our concerns are dismissed, ignored, or minimized, and we have seen that lead to very, very horrific consequences.
Dr. Uche Blackstock talks to Michelle Martin about her fight against racism in medicine.
Welcome to the program, everyone. I'm Christiane Amanpour in London. The US Senate has finally unveiled a bill tying together border security and support for Ukraine and Israel. The package would transform immigration law and give some $60 billion worth of military aid to Ukraine, a much-needed boost for the beleaguered nation that's mired in a two-year effort to fend off Russia. But the bill has a tough road ahead still, especially in the House, where it's already been declared, quote, dead on arrival, under pressure from former President Donald Trump. Meantime, uncertainty within Ukraine too, as President Zelensky tells Italian media a reset is needed to shake up the country's war effort. But despite being bogged down on the Eastern Front, there is progress in the South. Kyiv has successfully used drones and other technology to outmaneuver Russia in the Black Sea, as Fred Pleitkin reports from the main port city of Odessa.
It was one of the most brazen and most successful operations by Ukraine's military intelligence service. Sea drones attacking and, the Ukrainians say, sinking a Russian warship inside occupied Crimea. And he was one of those involved. His call sign is 13 from the elite sea drone unit named Group 13. So secretive, we had to hide his face and change his voice. We used 10 drones in the operation, he says. Six of them hit the corvette Ivanovets. CNN cannot independently verify that the Ivanovets was sunk, but video provided by the intelligence agency seems to show the mini sea drones evading machine gun fire from the warship and then massive explosions. Their weapons are not designed to deal with such small sea drones, 13 says. In most cases, they use anti-ship guns. Ukraine barely has a functioning navy, but the Magura drones pack a massive punch, around 500 pounds of explosives.
These sea drones might not look like much and they might not go very fast, but the Ukrainians say they've been extremely effective at attacking Russia's Black Sea fleet and even sinking warships.
The main thing is to feel the drone, 13 says. Not everyone can hold a firm grip. If you squeeze a little, you can lose control of the drone. I would say it's like working with jewelry. Asymmetrical warfare, they call it, and the Ukrainians, outmanned and outgunned, say they need to do a lot more of it. After visiting the Southern Front this weekend, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky telling Italian media he not only plans to fire his top general Valery Zaluzhny, there could be a larger government shakeup. A frontrunner to become the new commander-in-chief, the defense intel boss known for brazen attacks against Russian military and infrastructure targets. The Russians are waking up at night to explosions, he says. Explosions in the air, explosions directly at the facilities. They see the real picture of war. They see burning oil depots, destroyed buildings and factories, and so on. This is all beneficial. And the Ukrainians vow to continue hunting Russian military vessels in this battle of David versus Goliath on the high seas.
Fred Pleitkin reporting there from southern Ukraine. Well, one country watching all this with laser focus is Finland. The Nordic nation recently became the 31st member of NATO and shares an 800-mile border with Russia. They're currently in the midst of a presidential election, but both candidates for the top job agree on supporting Ukraine. Joining me now is Alexander Stubb, who squeaked out a win in the first round and faces the voters again on Sunday. Alexander Stubb, welcome back to our program. I'm going to talk about the election in a second, but I want to know first, after our report from Fred Pleitkin, what you make of the successes, because really, as you know, there's just a lot of doom and gloom coming from the Ukrainian battlefield.
Yeah, I think the war is very much in a stalemate, and in a sense, it's much easier to defend than to attack. And there's been a lot of back and forth in the past 2 years approaching the anniversary. I do agree with the Secretary General of NATO that the path towards peace does go through the battlefield. I think right now what Ukraine needs is finance. We got that from both the US, hopefully, and from the European Union. It needs weapons. And finally, it needs ammunition. I think we should use the term that Mario Draghi, the head of ECB, used in the old days during the euro crisis. Whatever it takes, we need to help Ukraine.
And just to quote their potentially outgoing army chief, Valery Zaluzhny, who wrote an essay for CNN saying, "We must contend with the reduction in military support from key allies grappling with their own political tensions." So I don't know, is Finland grappling with political tensions? You are in a runoff for the next round of voting to be president. And I believe in Finland, the president is, you know, makes a lot of the foreign policy decisions, if not all of them. What would be the difference, depending on who wins, for Ukraine?
I think no difference. Both Pekka Haavisto and myself are steadfast supporters of Ukraine. And indeed, the president of Finland is tasked with foreign policy, and he or she is also the commander-in-chief. We've done our share and we'll continue to do that. I know the sums feel a little bit small, but 1.6 billion is not a small figure for us. On top of that, we've given about 0.6 billion on aid. So we will continue to help Ukraine. And of course, you can ask why. Well, the reason is that we have in our historical memory many skirmishes with Russia. They attacked us in the Winter War and the War of Continuation. So we have a very similar experience to the Ukrainians. We can identify with the tragedy that's taking place right now. That's why most Finns stand behind Ukraine.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
We turn now to breaking news, as Buckingham Palace says that King Charles III has been diagnosed with a form of cancer. The palace saying during the king's recent hospital procedure for benign prostate enlargement, a separate issue of concern was noted. Subsequent diagnostic tests have identified a form of cancer. His Majesty has today commenced a schedule of regular treatments, during which time he's been advised by doctors to postpone public-facing duties. Throughout this period, His Majesty will continue to undertake state business and official paperwork as usual. The King is grateful to his medical team for their swift intervention, which was made possible thanks to his recent hospital procedure. He remains wholly positive about his treatment and looks forward to returning to full public duty as soon as possible. That, as I said, is the full statement from Buckingham Palace. CNN will continue to follow this story and will keep you up to date.
A regency would be when the monarch was incapacitated and would have to hand over official duties of state to Prince William. That isn't the case. This is just everything outside of that. So Prince William very much becomes the figurehead, the public figurehead now of the monarchy, whilst the king is out of action publicly, but carrying out his work behind the scenes. Also, Queen Camilla would be expected to step up as well to show continuity, because monarchy is about continuity of the head of state, of the monarchy. So people need to represent that in the absence of the king's presence. So it will be very alarming to people in the United Kingdom, but they've sent out a very carefully written note. I'm going to get more information as well to reassure the public that the monarchy is still intact and the constitution continues. But a huge amount of concern will be raised about what it means, particularly when we have such a slimmed down monarchy anyway. And now we also have three of the four senior royals, two of the senior royals out of public sight, and two having to pick up all of the public-facing duties.
We have been seeing some video of the king leaving the hospital. Again, that was on January 29th. He only became king last year, of course, Max, and he has been rather active. So how much will the British public notice as he scales back his duties? How much has he actually been undertaking these various royal engagements?
Well, he's extremely busy. He takes his work extremely seriously, and he is absolutely dedicated to his work. I can say that as an impartial journalist, because I follow him. And when you compare him to other royals, he's doing so much behind the scenes, but you also see him very much in public. So this, as you point out, is his early monarchy. More important than ever that he's seen out in public, establishing himself as head of state and replacing Queen Elizabeth, who was iconic in her role and a very big shoes to step into. So this is significant for his monarchy. He won't be able to represent the monarchy in the way it hoped. And as I say, a huge amount of responsibility now for Prince William to step up and really show that the monarchy is still strong. We did see King Charles at the weekend, and he looked really healthy. It was just a still photograph of him, and that was sanctioned, I think, by the palace. So I think at the weekend they felt very confident, and he looked very confident when he left the hospital. So I think this will be a real shock to the family and to the palace, and there will be a lot of work behind the scenes to try to make sure the mechanics of the system continue and that the king is still able to carry out that really crucial official paperwork, because without the king being able to sign documents, the constitution literally grinds to a halt. You can't, you know, bring in new laws, you can't appoint prime ministers, you can't get involved when there are serious matters of state. So it is crucial, and they will frankly have to be considering, you know, what does happen if the king gets more ill and isn't able to carry out even those essential duties. So that would be where the regency would come into effect. And as an insurance policy, they will be considering that at this point, but that's a very well-rehearsed, regularly rehearsed practice anyway. So I think that's just a matter of ticking a few boxes and expecting Prince William to very much step up.
And we are looking at live pictures outside Buckingham Palace. It is just past 6 p.m. in London right now, with the news from that palace that the King of England, of the United Kingdom, King Charles III, has been diagnosed with some kind of cancer. They are not saying what kind. He has just left the hospital several days ago after being treated for what they're calling a benign prostate enlargement, during which time they noticed a separate issue of concern. Max Foster, I'm going to ask you to stand by. We'll get back to you when there's more news. In the meantime, I'm going to toss it over to Boris.
We're joined now to discuss with CNN royal historian Kate Williams. Kate, I quickly want to get just your reaction to this news, a cancer diagnosis for King Charles.
Well, obviously, it is very worrying. Cancer, more than two of us do suffer from cancer in the world, but it is a worrying and scary diagnosis to receive. And I'm sure a lot of people are wishing the king, thinking of the king's health at the moment. But this is really wishing a very different way of dealing with health to what we saw under the queen. We were told that the queen was having a few tests, going into hospital. In the case of Charles, we've been told he was going in for an enlarged prostate, minor surgery, and now we've been told, that he did stay in one extra night and that he is going to be going for cancer treatment, but that he will be carrying on with his duties. I think we see a very different monarchy here. The Queen came to the throne when she was just a young woman, when she was 25. He comes to the throne when he's nearly 75, and he's just saying here, I think, very clearly, yes, I'm having health issues. Yes, I'm having very common health issues, but there's no need to panic. There's no need to worry. I'm going to continue with my duties online and in a constitutional way. So really, we have a lot of transparency about the king's health here. And I think the reason for that is to stop people from panicking that perhaps he's iller than we realize.
To that point, Kate, I believe it was King George that passed away after complications from a surgery to relieve cancer, and the British public wasn't aware that he was having that issue, right?
Yes, King George VI, the Queen's father, he had lung cancer. He was a lifelong smoker and it did affect him. He died very young in his 50s and no one knew. And in fact, even the Queen herself was not aware of how ill the King was. That's why she went on a tour to Africa. That's why she was in Kenya when she became Queen. No one knew. He passed away without anyone realizing it. He had the surgery actually at Buckingham Palace. They set up a operating theatre in Buckingham Palace. It was so secret. And we see a completely different way of dealing with health with the royals. We were told that Kate was going into hospital. She would be there for some time and that the king would be going to the same hospital. We were told when he was staying one more night. I think he said very clearly that he wanted other men to raise awareness of prostate cancer. He wants to raise awareness of enlarged prostates and that condition. And now I think that, although he's not saying now, we probably will be told at some point what kind of cancer the king is suffering from. And I think for the same reason, he'll want other people to get checked, people to talk about it, to raise awareness, because important.
That effort to raise awareness was successful. There were details from the NHS that they received 11 times more visits after Buckingham Palace announced that he was receiving treatment for an enlarged prostate. Let's get some medical perspective now. With us is CNN medical analyst Dr. Jonathan Reiner. Dr. Reiner, so this news coming after the king went through this procedure to examine his enlarged prostate, this apparently raised a separate issue of concern, a form of cancer. The palace says that he remains wholly positive about his treatment. What do you make of that?
Well, Boris, it seems like in the course of his treatment for his procedure, surgical procedure for his prostate cancer, they discovered another problem. And when you're admitted to the hospital, you often get tests like a chest x-ray. So a chest x-ray might have found, a lesion in his lungs. You have, basic blood, preoperative bloods obtained. So that might show that he's anemic, and that might have, led to, a further workup. But it sounds like in the course of sort of the routine evaluation prior to his prostate surgery, they discovered that something else was amiss.
So just to be clear, the prostate enlargement was found to have been benign. So it does not appear that he has prostate cancer. Walk us through the spectrum, doctor, of potential treatments for someone, because obviously there are many different forms of cancer that affect people in a variety of different ways. What could we be seeing the king undergo here?
Well, obviously there are, 1,000 possibilities based on the specific type of cancer. But again, if I had to surmise, I would guess that this would be something that would have been found on routine diagnostic screening that is done when a patient comes in for a surgical procedure. And that, you know, raises the question of whether they found something on a chest x-ray or whether he was unusually anemic or his white blood cell count was elevated, suggesting, you know, a problem, you know, that could be linked to something like leukemia. The issue I have with these kinds of incremental announcements from, you know, high profile people, you know, or, the palace is that I can surmise and the public can guess much worse things often than are really true. And the best policy for a leader of a country or royalty is just to tell the public straight out what's going on so that people don't have to guess, people don't have to think about the worst. And, you know, the public in Great Britain really does have a right to know what's going on with their monarch.
Dr. Jonathan Reiner, please stand by. We're, of course, going to be tracking the very latest news out of the UK. Buckingham Palace announcing that King Charles III has been diagnosed with cancer. We're going to get the very latest on this story and continue bringing you the latest news from the UK when we come back.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. There's been a ton of writing about the album Cowboy Carter since it dropped this spring. But what grabbed my attention is a new documentary on CNN called Call Me Country, Beyoncé and Nashville's Renaissance. Lots of artists have tried to boot scoot their way onto country music charts. Why did this album cause such a stir? And what about both this pop star and this political moment has caused all this conversation? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Buckingham Palace announcing that King Charles III has been diagnosed with cancer. This comes after he had a recent hospital procedure for a benign prostate enlargement. That's when a separate issue of concern was noted. We've learned from a source close to Buckingham Palace that it's actually not prostate cancer what he's dealing with, but we learned that the king is going to continue official state business and official paperwork as usual, even as his doctors have told him to scale back his public-facing duties. Still a lot of questions to be answered, even as Buckingham Palace says that they announced this for the sake of transparency. A lot of speculation about what challenges he may be facing moving forward.
Yeah, they actually said that they put out this statement and chose to share this diagnosis to prevent speculation. That's their phrasing. They're not necessarily, however, sharing his diagnosis. They're just saying that it is a form of cancer. I want to bring back in our panel of experts. And Jonathan Reiner, to you, I think it's fair to say that you would like more transparency here. And a moment ago, we were talking about the fact that this can be a teachable moment and really help the public. And that's something that the royal family has recognized and King Charles said in alerting the public that he was going into the hospital. But what do you make of this statement where they talk about a form of cancer, they say that he's being diagnosed with a form of cancer, but do not give the kind of cancer? Does this not fuel more speculation?
Yeah, I think that's quite ominous, actually. During his original hospitalization for the benign prostate hypertrophy, the palace went out of the way to remind the public that he did not have cancer, that it was important for them to know that he did not have cancer. Now that there is a different diagnosis, the palace seems to be very reticent to give any detail at all. And it just serves to fuel speculation and concern among the public. I think when public figures face serious illnesses like, you know, heart disease and cancer, you know, stigmatizing, you know, those diagnoses, you know, letting the sort of the air out of that and just being frank with the public goes really a long way. The king wanted to use the last procedure to get men to be more forthright about being checked. And again, I think when you talk about your own diagnosis and your own struggle, you humanize yourself and also you motivate people to be more proactive about their own health. So I hope the palace uses this as an opportunity to be more transparent and to help, you know, the British public understand better where their monarch is right now.
We also have Max Foster with us. And Max, we're getting an important update regarding the cancer diagnosis. We've learned that the Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry, has reached out to his father, King Charles, about the cancer diagnosis. The two of them did speak. And apparently Prince Harry is going to be traveling to the UK to see the king in the coming days.
Yeah, I've just been in contact with them and they gave me that information. In terms of the alarm, this is, you know, in a way it does add to it that Harry feels he needs to come over. But of course, he would want to come over if your father's ill anyway. I think that, you know, this is all a case of trying to manage public concern in this situation. But if Harry's coming over, it does show that he's very concerned. And obviously the bar for him coming over is much higher because he's estranged from the family currently. But good news that he's speaking to his father and is able to support him. I've spoken also to Kensington Palace, waiting to hear if Prince William's going to be making a statement. I'm sure he will be at some point. But there's also this, you know, will to try to keep calm amongst the United Kingdom and not worry people too much. So it's a careful balancing act. But, you know, when you get a headline saying the king has got cancer, it's going to create a certain level of alarm. And the palace will deal with it in the way that they often do. I mean, we did have a lot of speculation around how Queen Elizabeth died. And that was a great frustration to them. But they did stick to that system where they didn't give the exact details of exactly what ultimately killed her. And they still haven't told us since. And I doubt whether they'll ever tell us, because there's only a very small group of people that have access to that information. The king does have a very significant medical team. There's a medical team, an official medical team at Buckingham Palace, but he also has his own private doctor that travels with him. So, you know, when I'm traveling with the king, the doctor will often be alongside me. So that could be an abundance of caution, but obviously there's always concern about someone in their 70s in such a pressurized role. And people will be wondering exactly what it is. So you can't really avoid the speculation, but we expect to see Prince Harry coming over. We'll wait to see if we get an update from his office.
I want to bring in CNN royal commentator Emily Nash. Emily, with this news that Prince Harry has spoken with his father, that he will be traveling to the United Kingdom, I think this certainly serves as a reminder that at the end of the day, this is a family. They have had their trouble recently. This was once a very tight-knit family that has been fraying of late. The issues with Prince Andrew, who no longer performs royal duties, Prince Harry and his wife Meghan choosing to no longer undertake royal duties either. But as is so often the case, when you have a serious medical diagnosis, and particularly a cancer diagnosis, that will bring families back together. So to what extent do you think we will see the royal family behave perhaps in the coming days as a more, a more normal family, if you will, as they still try to balance the fact that they are not a royal family, not a normal family?
Yeah, well, look, you know, this is one of those moments that happens in life where people do forget about what's gone, you know, water under the bridge, and want to be together and spend time together. And I think it's fantastic that there is going to be this meeting, and that members of the family are going to be rallying around the king. You know, it's a really difficult moment for him. He thought he was undergoing treatment that was fairly straightforward and fairly routine. And he's now landed with this new diagnosis, and he's obviously wanted to tell his sons in person or sort of personally over the phone. You know, I understand that the Prince of Wales is in very, very regular contact with his father as well. And it does really humanise them. It's a reminder, and sadly, most people watching this will know someone or will have been affected by cancer themselves. And it's just very much a reminder that they are human beings at the end of the day.
I do want to get back to Max Foster for a moment, because Max, this also comes at an interesting time for politics in the UK. You have this cost of living crisis, questions about the future of government. Obviously, elections have to be called before the end of the year. Some of them, some folks calling for them to come sooner. And the king has to actually invite the prime minister, according to British policy, to make a new administration. How could this potentially complicate that process?
Yeah, well, even before they have to appoint the prime minister to build that administration, we've been told very clearly that those key matters of state will continue to be held by the king, and he's able to carry them out. So very much reassurance on that level. You're right. I mean, the system here is that the monarchy represents the nation. It represents continuity. You'll remember in times past, not that long ago, during Brexit and Boris Johnson's administration, there was a huge amount of chaos in British politics. And the Queen very successfully made more appearances and stepped up to represent that continuity. And it did reassure the British people that whilst one side of the Constitution was falling apart, the other side is standing firm. And that's what they represent. And so in a year of an election, if it does get very chaotic, they will look to the monarchy. It's an instinctive thing that British people do. And King Charles won't be there in the public eye for the foreseeable future, as we understand it. But let's hope he gets better so we do see him. Until then, it will be Queen Camilla and the Prince of Wales very much representing the monarchy. And we will see Prince William turning up to key constitutional events in his father's place. So it will feel different, the monarchy. And when you consider the Queen was on, Queen Elizabeth was on the throne for so many years, and we were used to so much stability within the monarchy, it does, you know, it does unnerve people when different parts of the constitution start looking shaky, as it were. But this is going to be the job of the palace and the king to really represent the continuity, and they've had lots of experience, centuries of experience of doing that. So they have their systems for doing that. But it, you know, this is the key job right now until we hear an update from the king.
They certainly do have their systems, though the past is certainly clashing with the more modern era, and something that the royal family recognizes with the level of transparency that we have seen from them, certainly on the medical front in the last few weeks, though we appear to be at least starting to see some of the limits of that transparency. So they certainly have a lot to figure out, and there are certainly major questions that remain. I'm going to ask you all to stay with us. There is lots more to discuss on this breaking news of King Charles III's cancer diagnosis. We'll be right back after this quick break. And we are back with our breaking news that King Charles III has been diagnosed with cancer. A statement just out a short time ago from Buckingham Palace saying that he has been diagnosed with a form of cancer. They did not specify what kind of cancer it is. There you can see him leaving the hospital just a few days ago on January 29th with his wife, Queen Camilla. He had been in that London hospital for treatment for what they called a benign prostate enlargement. And then according to Buckingham Palace, during the course of the examinations while he was in the hospital, there was a separate issue of concern that was noted. Buckingham Palace today saying that they are revealing this cancer diagnosis to prevent speculation, but at the same time not specifying what exactly King Charles III is dealing with right now. I want to bring in Kristen Meinzer, who is a royal watcher. She's the host of the Daily Fail podcast. Kristen, thank you much, so much for joining us. What stands out to you in the way that Buckingham Palace is communicating this news today?
You know, one of the things that's most notable to me is the difference between this messaging and the messaging around Kate Middleton's recent procedure. As we know, she had a planned abdominal surgery right around the same time King Charles was having treatment for his enlarged prostate. And the palace has made clear that it is not cancerous in the case of Kate Middleton, but they're also choosing to tell us nothing beyond that, saying that she would like to maintain her privacy at this point. And I think it's really interesting that in terms of King Charles, there's been a lot more transparency, you know, speaking frankly about his prostate, speaking frankly about this cancer diagnosis. And supposedly this is King Charles's attempt to demystify these things and to be transparent, as the new statement says. And even though it's not 100% transparency, we don't know what type of cancer we're dealing with here. I think that it does in some ways reassure the public to know that there's at least a name for it. There's something that they can point to and say, this is what's going on here. And in that way, it's very different. With Kate, there's still a lot of speculation in the press, in the tabloids, in the public, and so on about what's really happening with Kate.
And Kristen, quickly, the king is now the latest member of the royal family to be dealing with cancer, because just a few days ago it was announced that Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, also known as Fergie, is now dealing with a rare kind of skin cancer. Is that right?
Yes, and this is not Fergie's first instance of dealing with cancer. And also the queen in her later years was dealing with a bone cancer. So they are still mortal. They are still human. And, you know, over a third of cancer cases happen in the UK in people who are over 75. King Charles is in that category of people. And so he's mortal. His family is mortal. He's of a certain age. These things happen, unfortunately, but he does have the absolute best care in the world, far better care than most of us could ever dream of having. And he is being well taken care of. He's got medical professionals round the clock keeping an eye on him and making sure that he's getting what he can get to address the situation.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.